It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Christmas. I'm a big fan of Christmas, and I love celebrating our Lord's birth. I'm off for the Christmas holidays. My team and I are enjoying our time with our family. I hope you are too. Please listen in to some of our favorite recorded interviews, some of our favorite interviews, yeah, and enjoy your Christmas holidays.
I wanted to share this with you. It's about my friend Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's his six rules for success. And Arnold Schwarzenegger has inspired me. He's probably inspired you. He's certainly inspired millions of people. This guy sets a goal, he reaches a goal, he sets another goal, he reaches that goal. We've seen him succeed in business. We've seen him succeed in athletics. We've seen him succeed in movies. Then we saw him succeed again in politics. Now he's back into movies. So check out my friend Arnold Schwarzenegger in the six rules for success.
I can explain how I became successful and who I am today by going through what I call Dr. Schwarzenegger's six rules of success. But before I start, I just wanted to say these are my rules, and I think that they can apply to anyone, but that is for you to decide, because not everyone is the same. There's some people that just like to kick back and coast through life, and others want to be very intense and want to be number one and want to be successful. And that's like me. I always wanted to be very intense. I always wanted to be number one. I took it very seriously in my career. So this was the same when I started with bodybuilding. I didn't want to just be a bodybuilding champion. I wanted to be the best bodybuilder of all times. The same was in the movies. I didn't want to just be a movie star. I wanted to be a great movie star that's the highest paid movie star and have above the title billing. And so this intensity always paid off for me. This commitment always paid off for me. So here are some of the rules. The first rule is trust yourself. And what I mean by that is so many young people are getting so much advice from their parents and from the teachers and from everyone. But what is most important is that you have to dig deep down and ask yourselves, who do you want to be? Not what, but who. And I'm talking about not what your parents and teachers want you to be, but you. I'm talking about figuring out for yourselves what makes you happy, no matter how crazy it may sound to the people. So rule number one is, of course, trust yourself no matter how and what anyone else thinks.
Here's the goal, and whatever it takes to get there, I will do. So I was doing my daily work, cleaning the guns and going to the shooting range, marching 20 miles a day and crawling around up hills with weapons, running at 5 in the morning with heavy combat boots and all of this stuff. And when everyone just almost drops dead at night and is totally exhausted, I worked out 3 hours and got up early in the morning again to do my sit-ups and my push-ups and my chin-ups. There was a clear conflict, a dilemma, because the lifting was not a traditional sport for them. They didn't like the idea. They didn't even have the equipment. I had to go and figure out every way possible to do dips between chairs or to the bar across two chairs and do upside-down rowing. Everyone would say, this is the wrong direction that I'm going, or I'm in a dream world, and I'm useless. But whatever it was, I said, I'm going to break through that. No matter what it takes, I needed to reach that goal, that vision that I had of being a world champion.
You have to think outside the box. That's what I believe. After all, what is the point of being on this earth if all you want to do is be liked by everyone and avoid trouble? The only way that I ever got any place was by breaking some of the rules.
Think big, because then you're going to get big. Then you're going to go and achieve big things. That is the most important thing. You know, we don't achieve big things by accident. So shoot for the top, shoot for the sky, shoot for the, you know, for the stars. All of those liabilities that they talked about started turning into assets. When they did Conan the Barbarian, the director came to me and he said, if we wouldn't have you, we would have had to build one. And on Terminator, the director said, I couldn't imagine to have anyone play Terminator that wouldn't have an accent and they wouldn't have your body. I cannot imagine the line, I'll be back, with a normal American accent. It works so perfectly that you have this German accent. So all of those things that they say the liabilities became an asset. The moment, as moment went on, it grew and grew, and I went from one movie to the next, started making more and more money, and then I ended up being the highest paid actor with $30 million on Terminator 3.
Damals, wie das eben war, Bodybuilding in dem Sinn hat es ja eigentlich nicht gegeben. Und wir Jungs haben damals immer gesagt, geh Arnold, ach, wenn's träumst, leg dich nieder. Von den Eltern aus, das war ja eigentlich nicht sehr erwünscht.
My father, he said, this is an embarrassment to me, and was stomping all over me. I said I wanted to get into acting. People said, no, you have an accent and you have a body that is too big and your name no one can pronounce. Be realistic. It's the 70s. Today, Dustin Hoffman, he's the big shot. Al Pacino, little guys, Woody Allen, sex symbol. Even when I ran for governor, they said, are you kidding me? I mean, you can never win. Give it up. But I didn't pay any attention because I said to myself, what did I do? When they said you can't go to Germany, you can't compete in a junior Mr. Europe, that I did not listen to the no. I went and it worked out. And I used that attitude as a blueprint for the rest of my life. The other thing is that you got to work your butt off. If you think that you're going to go and accomplish something really special and be the best in anything in the world, and you think you can do it without working, you make a big mistake. Because no matter what I did, if it was in bodybuilding or in acting or if it is in the political arena, it always took a lot of work. And you got to put out and you got to, you know, sometimes make a lot of sacrifices in order. If you're not willing to work hard, forget about it. So there's another rule that is very important. Don't be afraid to fail. Because if you're afraid to fail, then you're always holding yourself back because you're afraid that if you go all out, you may fail. Well, in weightlifting, we learned that very quickly. The only way you could break a record is if you're willing to fail. That's when you put on more weight, you try it. Sometimes you would not be able to lift it, which has happened to me many times. But eventually, when you train hard enough, you will lift it. So don't be afraid to fail. I mean, how far can you fall? You're going to find the naysayers in every turn that you make. Don't listen. Just visualize your goal. Know exactly where you want to go. Trust yourself. Get out there and work like hell. And break some of the rules and never, ever be afraid of failure.
We're going to take a quick commercial break and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we are back. My next guest, Bill Bartman. Bill is joining us as we speak. There seemed to be we had a little drop-off there, a little technology snafu, but Bill's joining us as we speak. Let me tell you about my friend Bill Bartman. I think he's one of those guys that makes a difference in the world, certainly makes a difference here in America, because he is what I call a industry disruptor. Bill Bartman, founder of and CEO of CFS2, an aggressive advocate for reform in the debt collection industry, said, "I'm convinced we are on the right track to reforming an industry of rampant abuse, and Governor Henry will play a big role in helping to deliver our message to the regulators and capital sources." Here's what's interesting. Bill Bartman is a debt collector, but he's a sweetheart. He collects debt in the nicest way possible. He's built an industry like that. This is the second time. He became a billionaire doing this. Bill Bartman is a real entrepreneur because he's taken an industry and really turned it upside down. Bill Bartman, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, Bert, how are you? And sorry about the snafu. I think it was on my end. We'll call it technical difficulties.
Well, you know what? The great thing about a live show is that all sorts of things happened. Last week, because of the snowstorms in the East Coast, we were shut down several days. You know, it's just crazy what can happen, but I'm so delighted to have you back on the show, Bill.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that. And I was able to call in and listen to Tom Hopkins, and Tom is just a wonderful friend. He's a mentor. He's a guide. He's someone I've shared the stage with probably 30 or 40 times in the old Get Motivated days. Remember those traveling
yes.
circus shows?
Yeah.
Tom and I would do those together with, and it'd be so great to walk into a basketball venue and you have 20 to 22,000 people in the stadium, and you're giving them a presentation or a conversation about what it is you think might be helpful to them. And I always marveled at Tom because he would have a new topic every time, and people would be literally sliding forward in their seats to hear what it is he had to say. And what a master he is.
Well, that is very nice, and I bet you you'll get a thank you note from him on that. Let's talk about this. You have gotten a best-selling book out called Bouncing Back, which is a riveting story. I read this. I forgot how many pages, approximately 300 or 400 pages. I sat down, read it on a Saturday. It's riveting. It's your life experience going from absolutely broke and kind of in a sort of a somewhat dysfunctional family. I mean, we're all dysfunctional, but kind of an abusive, almost dysfunctional family. A dropout, a high school dropout, to becoming a dropping back in, all your different challenges getting through school and then college and then law school and all this other stuff, and then the amazing climb that you went to from being a billionaire, and then you had some challenges then. My question to you is, how were you able to do all of this and still maintain this demeanor of sincerely, and I mean this with all sincerity, of just a nice guy, of true love and respect for other human beings? How are you not a bitter guy?
Well, I only lost $4.5 billion, so it wasn't that bad. Had it been serious money, Bert, then maybe I would have been upset. You know, I'm only joking slightly. It doesn't matter, you know, what you lose. I mean, of course, we can all sit here and say, well, you know, I've been wronged, or somebody did me bad, or, gee, you know, we all have those kind of stories. And every one of us have a right to be mad and angry and upset and bitter, as you mentioned, about those things that have happened to us. But that won't do us a bit of good. That will waste energy. That will just be stupid time on our part. Yes, we have an absolute right to go do it, and people expect us to go do it, but it's stupid if we do it. And realizing that, I thought, well, why would I spend my time doing that? Why would I be mad? Why would I be upset? Why would I be bitter? Why would I want to fume around and say they took advantage of me, or they screwed me, or whatever vernacular you'd put it in? Why don't I instead just turn the other direction and go get busy and get back to work and make some more money to make up for what I lost? And that's what I did. And I don't think it's remarkable or marvelous or wonderful. I think it's common sense.
Yeah, but of course, we both know that common sense isn't always common. I think what astonishes me and what astonishes people is this wasn't just a business that went belly up. For instance, when you were in the oil business and the oil market changed, that business went belly up. And people could say, well, you know what, you lost that business because of the market, the conditions in the market, and there's nothing you can do about it. But however, in this other business, CFS, the first one, it wasn't that. It was definitely a different environment. I'm not going to give it away. I want everybody to go out to Amazon and get this book. It's called Bouncing Back. It will teach you a lot about business, a lot about humanity, and it's all the proceeds go to charity. The book's called Bouncing Back. But I want to kind of get into the nitty of this. So Bill, again, thanks for joining us. I want you to tell people what CFS2 is all about and the business model behind it, because you've really taken this industry of collecting debt, you've turned it upside down, but you're also using respect and, I'm going to say, sincere caring for your fellow man. So walk me through the business model.
Sure. Happy to do that, Bert. And it's, again, so it's common sense. And you're right. Common sense sometimes is pretty rare. But you know, somebody once said, genius, true genius is discovering the obvious. And all we did was discovered the obvious. And the obvious was that what your mother and everybody listening on this call's mother said to them at least once, you'll get more with honey than you get with vinegar. Now, that's true universally. Well, we applied that to the debt collection industry and said, okay, then, you know, the vinegar would be yelling and screaming and ranting and raving and pushing people into the muck and beating them into submission and pulling that last nickel out of their pocket, which, by the way, is kind of what the debt collection industry is famous for. We said, well, let's be the other guy. If that's vinegar, let's go be honey. Let's be the opposite of that. Let's go see if mom was right about you get more with honey than you do with vinegar. So we started a test project with 60,000 customers, a relatively small sample, and we said, we're not going to yell, we're not going to scream, we're not going to rant and rave, we're not going to be abusive, we're not going to sue them, we're not going to raise our voice, we're not going to do any of those bad, nasty things. Instead, we're going to start each conversation with, what can I do to help? So, Bert, if you were my customer, if you owed us money and I were your debt collector, I would call you up and say, Bert, what can I do? And you would say, well, Bill, I don't know. What can you do for me? I said, well, Bert, how about if I help you negotiate all of your other debts you have with all of your other creditors? And, Bert, I'll do that for nothing. I will do that free of charge. And you'll say, well, Bill, what's the trick? What's the gimmick? And I would say, there is no trick. There is no gimmick. It's good business. If I can help you resolve all of your other debt obligations, you'll have more wherewithal with which to pay me later. And maybe you won't be able to pay me for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, or 12 months, but someday later in life, you'll have more money if I can help you, and I expect you might choose to pay me later. And then you would say, sure, Bill, let's start, and I would go ahead and begin that program. But then immediately I would say, Bert, let me help you get a better job. Let me help you improve your employment situation, because maybe, in fact, you're actually unemployed, and if you're not unemployed, you're probably underemployed. And so we write resumes for our customers. We post them on job search sites. We then have our own staff go find job openings that fit that person's resume. We then fill out the application. We schedule the interview. We get that person to practice the interview with us on the telephone and on Skype, and their chances then of succeeding are just extremely higher. And then the third thing we do for nothing for that customer is we say, what else can I do to help you? And they say, well, yeah, I don't know. I need a hot water heater or you know, I have a leaky roof. And you say, really? They would say that? You say, yeah, because they really do have those things. And so we would say, okay, we'll go fix your leaky roof. We'll go give you a free hot water heater. And we do all those things for nothing, knowing that as we do them for people, we are creating another debt of gratitude and that most people are honorable. And here's the result. After 3 years, 60,000 people as an experiment, we are collecting 200% more than any debt collector in history.
Wow. Wow. And this is the part that's so amazing, is that, you know, you look at the debt collection industry in whole, and you're right. I mean, it's rampant with abuse and trickery and deceit. And we've heard people who have been lied to and were threatened with jail. You've gone the complete reverse. Again, you're disrupting the industry by being not only a nice guy. It's one thing to be the nice guy and say, listen, we're not going to, you know, we're going to treat you with respect. You've gone the extra mile, and you've become the good Samaritan to help people really cover or, in some cases, rearrange their life or their debt. So not only are they doing a better, they're doing better in life, but now they can pay you and live better. And I'm just amazed at the high level of goodwill that you're developing. I mean, these guys have to look forward to getting a call from your company.
Well, they do, Bert, and that's what's so amazing, because the debt collection model is premised on outbound phone calls, meaning the debt collector has to go find the debtor and get them on the telephone to hopefully do some collection effort energy with. And most debtors are relatively smart, and they know what that number means, and they see the caller ID, and they aren't real eager about picking up that phone to be suffering some self-abuse by a debt collector. So that's the model for the other guy, the vinegar guy. A honey guy, our customers call us. We don't call them. They call in. to say, hey, here's what's going on in my life. Here's what I'm doing today. Here's what's important to me. Oh, by the way, I just got a raise or a promotion or my tax refund or something, and I can send you some more money this month than I could last month. They're calling us. We don't call them. Now, how much easier is that, first, on my employees when they don't have to be mean and nasty? They can be nice and generous. And secondly, when they don't have to make outbound phone calls, they just have to be the inbound receiver. It's just so it's phenomenal. Now, you know, members of Congress now, even the President of the United States and others have acknowledged what it is we're doing is not just disrupting the debt collection industry in America, and this is what's so neat, Burton, you don't know about this yet. We are now making an absolute impact on the bankruptcy rate in America. Now, you think about that just for a second. You know, X number of people are going to file bankruptcy because they're up to their eyeballs in debt, and bankruptcy
right.
is allowed and permissible for people who can't find a way out. Well, all of a sudden, we're helping people not file bankruptcy by resolving their other debts with their other creditors at a fair rate of exchange to both parties based on the facts. Customers are no longer having to seek bankruptcy. So we're actually reducing the bankruptcy rate in America, and better, we're reducing the unemployment rate in America, and we're stopping the number of lawsuits that get filed in America for debt collection. Now, yes, we're helping our customer one at a time, thousands at a time, but we're also helping the economy. Can you imagine that, a debt collector helping the economy?
You know, what I hear is not only are you helping the economy, but you're, you know, by helping these people out, helping them with their resumes, helping them avoid bankruptcy, you're raising their self-esteem. And you know as well as anybody out there that if you can raise somebody's self-esteem, you can change their life. You know, it's amazing
Absolutely.
To me. You know, it's amazing to me that you've taken this business that is pawned by so many people, and you have, again, I've said this before, you turned it upside down, and now, again, you're having the highest members of our government, including the president, people like Mother Teresa, who also mentioned you before she passed away, that your model not only works, but that your company that genuinely cares about its, you know, about what it does. And so
and Bert, it's so interesting to see the impact it actually has on families. And CBS 60 Minutes came and did a segment on us, and the clip is actually on my website, BillBartman.com, and Bartman has two N's in it. So I would encourage people to go look at the CBS Evening News segment. They interviewed one of our customers, and at the end of the interview, the customer eyes well up into tears when she describes her relationship with a debt collection company. And they are tears of joy, not tears of fear. And you go, really? Really? One of your debtors is talking to CBS 60 Minutes and she's saying nice things about how she had been treated over the course of the last year and how she's now completely out of debt? And how she's now, you know, back working and making a living and taking care of her family. Yeah, I mean, go see that video, and it will amaze you. And then put six zeros behind it, because we're going to do that for a million people, not just one person.
You know what? I'm going to encourage everybody to go see it. It's Bill Bartman, BartmanN.com, BillBartman.com. Check out his book as well. Bill, it's always good to have you on the show. I love what you're doing. It's absolutely one of those things. It's a fairy tale story come to life because, again, you're disrupting the industry. I've said that numerous times. You're helping people pull themselves up, which is what America is all about. You know, a
Absolutely.
Lot of us don't want a hand out. We want a hand up. Just help me out a little bit. Let me just catch my breath. Let me just get a better job instead of working two crappy jobs where I can't pay my bills, and all of a sudden, you know, that's what you're doing. You know, it's amazing to me. And we're going to have to find a different category to put you in, because really you're no longer a debt collector. You're more like a, I don't know, I'm speechless. I feel like what you're doing, but it's no longer a debt collector. It's more like...
Well, when you find out what it is we are, please call me and let me know so I can raise my hand appropriately.
I love it. Bill Bartman, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing. Looking forward to having you back again soon.
Thanks, Bert. Have a great day, buddy. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye. Guys, we're off and running. Great stuff there by Bill Bartman. Always, always a pleasure. And what's amazing about this, is that he built a multi-billion dollar enterprise on this, employed thousands of people. You guys can make a difference when you don't compromise your values.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back with Steve Forbes right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
My name is Peter Shankman, and I have a new book coming out called Zombie Loyalists, Using Great Service to Create Rabid Fans. If you go to a restaurant and you eat there and they really like you and you go back a lot and they treat you really well and they buy you a free drink and you bring friends and all you want to do is go to that place and that's the restaurant you go to all the time, you're a zombie loyalist for that restaurant. In my new book, I'm going to show you how to create zombie loyalists for your business, whatever kind of business that is. You're going to create customers who are so in love with you. They want to do your PR, they want to do your marketing, and they want to do your advertising for you. Remember, when you tell the world how awesome you are, no one believes you. But when someone else tells the world how awesome you are, everyone believes it. I'm going to show you how to be awesome to those customers so they bring you more and more customers and driving your revenue through the roof. Sales are going to explode. Customers are going to explode. Everyone is going to love you. This book will change what you think about your customers, how you treat them, and how you do business. It's going to be a wild ride. Everyone loves zombies. Buckle up.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. My next guest, Steve Forbes. You probably know Steve Forbes. Steve Forbes is the chairman, editor-in-chief of Forbes Media. Under Forbes leadership, the company has launched a variety of new publications and businesses. They include Forbes Life, the dedicated luxury lifestyle and culture magazine, Forbes Europe, Forbes Asia, Forbes License editions published in over 36 countries. In both 1996 and in 2000, Mr. Forbes campaigned vigorously for the Republican nomination for the presidency. Key to his platform were a flat tax, medical savings account, a new Social Security system for working Americans, parental choice of schools for their children, term limits, and a strong national defense. Mr. Forbes continued to energetically promote his agenda. Mr. Forbes' new book, Money, How the Destruction of the Dollar Threatens the Global Economy and What We Can Do About It, co-authored by Elizabeth Ames, came out, I guess, in last June, and also received the coveted Leonard E. Reed Book Award. Steve Forbes, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Good to be with you, Bert. Thank you.
Well, you know what? I want to jump in because I think that one of the things that I really enjoy about you and respect about you is that you write and you talk about a wide range of subject matter. I mean, from Jimmy Fallon to a flat tax to, e-cigarettes. I just like the fact that you are constantly looking at everything and not just focused on one or two areas. So I'm excited to have you here.
Well, great. It's good to be here. And there's no end of things to look at, be fascinated at, appalled at, and the world we have today.
Absolutely. All right. So I want to get your thoughts on our current administration and Prime Minister Netanyahu, the situation there. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, I think his election is profoundly good for civilization, for standing up to barbarism. I think that it's also going to help senators like Senator Corker of Tennessee to get through the Senate a veto-proof legislation requiring the president to put any agreement with Iran up for approval by Congress. It's outrageous that the president would make an agreement that could lead to a nuclear holocaust. do it, he thinks, by executive order, in effect, rather than having it publicly debated. I mean, this is a democracy, last I looked.
The changing face of democracy, really. But absolutely. No, I think that, both you and I believe in having a strong defense. And I think that our current administration seems to be missing the boat on this. I respect President Obama, and he is our commander-in-chief, but I think that there are certain things that I don't respect him for, I don't agree with him on, and one of them is I think that he just hasn't done enough in this area of defense.
Well, that's right. Our defense is being gutted, especially our uniformed forces, and we can see around the world the situation is getting dicier and dicier, and people feel America's in decline. So the bad guys are moving in the vacuum. And we last had this in the 1970s, which was a dreadful decade, including the mullahs taking over in Iran. And we turned it around largely with Ronald Reagan, but it's sad to see us getting in the rut again.
You know, a lot of people have made those comparisons. It seems like we're living through the Carter administration again, even making sometimes Carter look more Ronald-esque or Ronald Reagan-esque, and it's, again, no disrespect to President Carter. I think he's a decent man. I had the chance to sit down with him. I think he's a very sensitive individual, sometimes maybe not the best at being a president, but I think that our current president, I think he's just, I don't know.
Well, President Carter learned. I mean, he made mistakes, but at the end of his presidency, he was starting to realize the need for increasing, beefing up our defense. He started to take actions against the Soviet Union, particularly after the invasion of Afghanistan. And he's pushed some deregulation proposals, particularly in the area of transportation. So he learned, but this president refuses to learn.
Absolutely. You know, I think that's a great analogy there. And I think that not only does he refuse to learn, but he is and it's okay for a president to defy Congress. But I think he's defying not only Congress, but I think he's defying good, logical strategy that is put before him. He's defying everything and everybody. And I'm just grateful that we only have a couple of years left.
Well, we have to get through those a couple of years, and that's going to be the challenge. But you're right about experts. When the military almost unanimously urged him to leave a residual force in Iraq after we did beat that insurgency, and to make sure the country didn't fall apart again. But he decided that he knew better. He quickly pulled out our forces, and indeed the military was right. The country went into chaos, and we're seeing the results of it today with the rise of ISIS, the ability of Iran to stir up bloody trouble in Syria and elsewhere.
All right, so you know what, and I agree with you there, and I'm going to change subject just because, I want to cover a bunch of different topics, and I want to get your opinion on. You know, I'm a big proponent of the flat tax, and I cannot understand why we just don't get this flat tax installed. It just seems it just makes so much sense for so many different reasons, and it seems so much easier to calculate than having this convoluted, massive tax code that even the experts have a tough time understanding.
Well, that's exactly the problem, is the experts can't understand it. Back in the days when the IRS, for example, answered its hotline, they're now not doing it because they say they don't have enough money. They gave the wrong information 25% to 30% of the time, but held you, the taxpayer, responsible for their own misinformation.
Yes.
And to put things in perspective, our Declaration of Independence is a little over 1,400 words. Our Constitution is a little over 7,500 words. The Bible is 783,000 words. And the Federal Income Tax Code, when you include all the attendant rules and regulations and interpretations, probably comes close to 9 million words. Nobody knows what's in it.
Yeah, and as you said, not even the IRS. I mean, it has become ridiculous, and it has to be gutted. It has to be reformed. And I think the flat tax, I guess the flat tax makes too much sense, and it's too practical. Therefore, we just can't touch it. That's the only conclusion that I come to.
Go ahead. Yeah, I was going to say, we're going to try to change that. We've just launched a new organization called Americans for Hope, Growth, and Opportunity. You can find it online, ahgo.us, that is dedicated to pushing the flat tax. We have a new flat tax proposal coming out, with a simple 17% rate, generous exemptions for adults and for kids. A family of four, for example, would have their first $52,000 of wages free of federal income tax, only 17% above that, and no tax on savings and no death taxes. Death will no longer be a taxable event. And we believe that Ronald Reagan was right when he said, you don't change minds on Capitol Hill through sweet reason. You do it through the heat of public opinion. So we're going to try to do our part to turn up the heat.
Oh, I think that's great, and I think that's a great way of doing it. I think you do have to turn up the heat of public opinion, and anything we can do, Steve, to get this information out there, we'd love to support your organization and get them on the show and see what we can do to turn up the heat, so to speak, and get everybody on board. Let me ask you this: e-cigarettes. You had articles on e-cigarettes, and I want you to talk about e-cigarettes and why you're kind of a proponent of e-cigarettes.
Yeah, well, e-cigarettes, I think, are a great device to either keep you from smoking or help you give up smoking. It's a vapor. It does not put smoke into your lungs, all the bad stuff that smoke does to your lungs. It does give you the nicotine in a way that is apparently better, people say. I'm not a smoker, but smokers who are now doing e-cigarettes, vapor cigarettes, say that it's better than patches, better than the nicotine gum, and they swear by it. And the proof of it is that among teenagers, smoking is now the lowest it's been since they started doing surveys among teenagers, lowest it's been in over 40 years, and e-cigarette use is up. So teenagers are doing the e-cigarettes rather than the lethal real stuff, and yet some public health officials are against e-cigarettes. They say it looks too much like smoking. Well, that's precisely it. Looks like it, gives you the thrill of it, but doesn't wreck your lungs. Hello.
Right. Absolutely. No, you know what? To me, again, and this is what's so funny about our democracy, our republic, if you will, is that what you and I, or maybe millions of us, see as common sense, you know, there's another equal size force that see it as dangerous. And to me, e-cigarettes is just like you said, it's a great way to get off cigarettes. It's also less harmful. And the only thing I can think of is the cigarette industry is behind all this push against e-cigarettes because they feel the threat. Otherwise, I don't think anybody in their right mind would look at e-cigarettes and you know, put them in the same exact category as a regular cigarette. And I'd say, what, my kids don't smoke, but if my kids were going to smoke, I'd much rather have them smoking e-cigarettes than the real stuff any day of the week.
Absolutely. And the concerns that maybe some kinds of e-cigarettes may need some changes or something, well, fine. Focus on those things, fine-tuning them. But this blanket ban and denunciation and absolute misinformation hurts public health. And that, so again, I don't get it.
Yeah. No, I don't either. I think it's, again, politics as usual, right? Big business behind behind it, just like they're trying to do with Uber, push out the little guys before they can impact their market. Steve Forbes, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about it, especially talk about the flat tax program that you're putting together, not program, but organization that you're putting together. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about that and see how we can get our flat the flat tax pushing forward.
Look forward to it, and they can, you know, ahgo.us, you can get a flavor of it, and again, we want to turn up that heat, and so look forward to coming back and stoking the fires.
Absolutely, and again, it's ahgo.org?
.us.
.us, I'm sorry, good, I'm glad I asked. So guys, check out ahgo.us. Steve Forbes, it's been a pleasure, looking forward to having you back again soon.
Thank you.
All righty. Guys, great stuff there. Just an enjoyable conversation with Steve Forbes. As you can see, the guy is just bright about so many different topics. Here we are talking about e-cigarettes, the flat tax, and Prime Minister Netanyahu. Remember, you can make a difference in our democracy. You can make a difference in our republic. You were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.